Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another Anatomy of a Movie here on Popcorn Talk. Welcome. It's the holiday season, and you know what? Bring joy into your life. That's right. Today we're discussing Jennifer Lawrence's and David O. Russell's next collaboration called Joy. We have Chelsea Galicia.
Hi.
And I'm your host, Phil Svitek. Now, this movie in particular is near and dear to me because, you know what? It's inspired by, obviously, Joy. But Joy happens to be the mother of Jackie Moran. Jackie Moran, who I happen to know and love very dearly. So shout out to Jackie Moran and your entire family. You know, without you guys, this movie wouldn't be possible. And you know what the irony is, Jackie, if you're listening? It now helps explain why you are the way you are. And I mean that in the best of ways. Jackie is a phenomenal woman. And
my name's Joy, by the way.
Yes, it is. I enjoyed this movie thoroughly. What about you?
Frankly, I was really worked up and annoyed for the first maybe 100 minutes, and then I was relieved in the last 20-some-odd minutes. I think I didn't actually time that. But that the buildup of annoyances and struggles and obstacles and obnoxious people, I was just like, oh, dear God, this has to turn out well because otherwise I'm going to lose my faith in the universe. And then thank God it does. And then, you know, all is well. But for me, I wasn't so, yes, this is an inspiring story, but it didn't feel all that uplifting. I just felt like relief, like thank God it turned out okay, because otherwise I just would be pissed off.
Well, that is the American dream. Like it's overcoming those everyday obstacles.
This woman just had way too many obstacles, and I'm...
But that's life.
I'm glad... No.
Don't you watch Shark Tank? Here's the thing. Like, Mark Cuban all the time says the American dream is alive and well, and you know, now we have Shark Tank and kind of keeps that going, and is it inspirational, and however you view it, at least that's
I'm not opposed to some obstacles, but this was just to another degree. Like, it was almost comical, and actually, as we'll talk about later, a lot of what we saw in the movie was not factual. So a lot of the things, like the obnoxious stepsister,
the spirit,
who I wanted to like punch her, and then, but God, and I'm not even a violent person, but I wanted to like just punch her and then pull her hair out. I was just, well, you know, so many of the character. I mean, her mother, ugh, the father. I mean, Robert De Niro is really amazing, but so freaking obnoxious. So just it was always constant, and just to such a degree that it was. It's almost silly. I understand what they were going for, though, but it just became a little much for me.
I think here's the thing. Like, if you took the story of AfterBuzz or Popcorn Talk and, you know, had to put it into movie form, yeah, it might – like, here's the thing. On a day-to-day struggle, there's a lot of struggles, but how do you put that into a cinematic element? Yeah, you have to sort of embellish these various things. And having spoken with Maria Menounos, she saw the movie – and she so understood it. She got it, and she put on her Boston accent, and right away, like, what? You think you're the only one with ideas? I got ideas, too, you know?
Nicely done.
Because that's how people and families are. Especially the sister was. I call her a shitbag, and I mean that in the best of ways. It's not just aimed towards women. But, like, she was that person that just didn't have much going for her, and she was jealous and bitter, and yet, boy, I've got ideas too. Oh yeah, then I execute them. And that was everyone, that was what kind of the make or break for Joy was like, yeah, you can have these ideas, but can you execute them? And that's what she was able to do. She executed them despite these obstacles.
Yes. I mean, there were enough real-life obstacles that could have made for an interesting movie. The other ones just, you know, made it over the top for me. But I understand it was effective in getting me to really feel for this woman's poor lot in life that she was handed. So I definitely would still recommend it, and I liked it, but it's not one that I'm dying to watch over and over again.
Well, the harder movies are, so the rewatchability factor isn't as high, but that doesn't make them bad movies.
No, absolutely not, and I definitely think that people should see this movie, for sure. Yeah.
Fair enough. Now, one of the things, if you know Chelsea, she kind of has a business acumen about her. So did you kind of, besides just the frustration of dealing with the business side of it, did you take away? Because Forbes came out with a great article that we'll discuss about, like, their five takeaways for business people. And did you walk away with anything in particular?
And I don't have any experience in creating any products. I do, you know, a legal background. I'm a lawyer. Could see some of the legal problems that she had to face, and the poor woman who, you know, didn't take great advice from this Trudy's lawyer told her the wrong, you know. So it definitely was accurate in terms of the kind of legal problems that come up. And then the whole, you know, the business thing, it was really amazing though that she created this like factory in her father's like car shop, employed all these women to like hand sew these.
Again, watch mops. Shark Tank happens all the time.
And that was really awesome to see. I don't have any personal experience with that kind of thing. So that was really cool. The overall feel that the business world is an animal, it's a monster, it's something to overcome and be conquered. Yeah, that felt real. That felt consistent with what I understand it to be.
But the nice part is, you know, and the really uplifting portion of it is she conquered it, but she didn't become a monster herself. Too many times, like, if you watch, like, a Wall Street movie, like, take Wolf of Wall Street, right? He started out as
I think business and money will show who you already are. If you're a dick without money, you're going to be a larger prick when you got more of it. Or it magnifies who you already are. I think that Wolf of Wall Street, when he started out, he didn't have a big of a platform to be as showy of how obnoxious he was until he made it big. So, yeah, this was a great story about a really down-to-earth, good-hearted, good-natured, hard-working, intelligent woman who stuck by that and didn't become corrupted by the ugliness of the world that she had to get through in order to make it.
And this is what Jackie Moran, you would think she could have the world handed to her in that way, and Jackie, being the daughter of Joy in real life, she's always gotten everything that she deserves because she's worked for it.
And that's awesome. Those are my favorite people.
See how that kind of, like, the fact that it's continued in that lineage.
Yeah. I grew up around a lot of people who had a lot of stuff who didn't need or deserve it, but because their parents just could give it to them. And I think because a lot of their parents weren't around, and so they were substituting things with, instead of time, mm-hmm. with their kids. And so I've seen a lot of the spoiled brats in the making, and it's not a pretty sight to watch. So I really love when I hear about somebody whose, you know, mom or dad was very ultra successful, but still stayed humble and down to earth and created what they are creating for their life for themselves. It's okay if they have support from their parents, but to completely ride on the coattails and to think that they're somebody special because of what their parents did, that would really annoy me. And so I'm glad to hear that Jackie's not at all like that.
No. So let's start kind of the only thing that I really didn't necessarily like, and I've seen it in a lot of reviews, just because I don't think it was unnecessary, was the narration by the grandmother.
Yeah, I think we could have done without it.
You know, and that was the problem. The story was so well shown that to be told that stuff, I didn't need it. Yes, it heightened her relationship with the grandmother for when the grandmother dies. But again, I would have understood that regardless, because that's just who Joy is.
Yeah, it didn't serve me at all. It didn't even the scene about when she loses the grandmother. right when you think, oh, things are starting to turn around, things are going, and then, oh, it was, you know, it didn't need to be that. It wasn't that poignant for me, like, as part of the story. Maybe if the relationship with the grandmother was so significant, the narration of her part in this movie didn't seem to make it important or really super close or super, like, it was a pivotal or important part to the whole development of the story.
Well, I thought it was pivotal because, you know, here you have the grandmother pushing her towards this, towards being creative. But at the same time, we got, you know, and when the turn comes, eventually she's like, oh, you know, my grandmother filled my head with all this stuff. And you kind of look at it, yeah, it's corrected that way because, the grandmother, what did she really accomplish, you know, if she had these grand ideas and so forth? So it's all just a bunch of hogwash in a sense.
I love it. Everybody's got great ideas. Everybody thinks they're brilliant. But really, it's all about the execution, like you said earlier. So, it's becomes just over and over a lot of people in the movie saying that they had great ideas, but it all just comes down to execution.
It really does. Choice. That's the number one lesson of this entire thing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, well, there's, again, we'll talk about the Forbes article, which I thought was great. In terms of, so let's start with Jennifer Lawrence, and we can talk about her acting, but also obviously it ties into the story. What did you think of her? Because if you don't buy her, then this movie obviously can't stand.
She was great, for sure. I can't say anything.
You don't think she was the only thing that people are coming out with is that she's too young. Now, this being the third David O. Russell kind of collaboration, I've learned to accept her in these roles as being what should be perhaps older women.
Yeah, well, I just thought it was me, but I was often looking at her skin, admiring how young she looked. So perhaps that was a distraction, that she, you know, is as young as she appears. And I don't know who else I would have cast in that character, though. I think she was great. I think she nailed it, and I'm not going to hold her age against her.
Fair enough. No, I think the good news is whether she's doing X-Men or Hunger Games or obviously these movies, she's able to play it really well.
I was convinced.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure, because I know David O. Russell, he had conversations with Joy. But one of the things, he spent like over 100 hours on the phone with her, but he never wanted to actually meet her because to those elements that you're alluding to, he wanted to have leeway with the story and not just have it be a biopic. So I'm not sure, you know, if Jennifer got to meet Joy ahead of time or how long or so on and so forth.
Been interesting to know. I'm not sure why David O. Russell didn't want to meet her, didn't want to make the character too much like her. Maybe he felt like he would be confined if he had met her and knew her character traits. But it's kind of fun because otherwise it's too much of a general, could be any person rather than.
Well, I think
she was a little bit too perfect.
In what way?
Well, she was the hero of every person in her life. She was the smart one. She was the one that was carrying everybody. So,
but there was the whole fact of that, you know, up until that, like, she's never proven herself in any sort of venue.
Yeah, but it's easy to say that, well, you know, just life has not afforded her the opportunity to prove who she is. Otherwise, she just...
But even, I mean, at those various certain points, she had those various opportunities. Like, you could see, one of the moments that I was cringing was every time that said people picked up the mop and they were like, oh, I don't get it. It's too complicated. So it's like one of those things you're like, oh, and it frustrates you because, yeah, it should be simple and you just don't get it. But I have seen, again, because I watched Shark Tank, and I don't mean to keep going back to that, but it's just so relates that there's so many inventors there that think that something's easy, but it's really not. And obviously I know the story and it succeeds, but in those moments, it's very cringeworthy because you're like, oh, that's tough. When it's supposed to be simple, when you're saying one of the things that it's just so easy, but people aren't getting it, you're like, ah, oh, damn it.
Yeah. That part was just weird. That guy was a moron.
But not even him. It was multiple people.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not used to using an awesome mop like this, I guess you could see it be used once and then understand. That for me wasn't enough to show that she had some sort of flaw or quirk that I could relate to. I would think that that'd be the only thing. And I don't know if that was a Jennifer Lawrence acting problem or just because of the fact that David O. Russell didn't get to know the real Joy to make the Jennifer Lawrence character too much like her. So there wasn't any little imperfection
why,
or flaw that I could see that would have made her.
Well, what imperfection really, were you looking for? I mean, she was giving up at certain points. So that was the biggest imperfection. Like, you know, the fact that you're ready to give up. Yeah, that's a huge. That's what separated her and her sister.
That she gave up at what point?
That she was almost about to give up. And there's certain points that she did kind of like, oh, should I, you know, I don't want to do this. I am going to quit.
Yeah, but that was all understandable. I don't know. I'm just saying that perhaps if David O. Russell had actually met her, spent some time with her, could understand her a little bit better, would have made the character more in depth rather than just this nice woman who worked hard and was everybody's hero.
Why? But even make it sound like one of the things that he was trying to accomplish was that there are multiple women with these great stories, right?
I mean, so that's, I guess her flaw is she chose a bad husband.
But he ended up being good.
Right. He was a great friend, a great business partner, not a great husband.
The fact that...
I guess that's a lot of women's downfalls.
No, but you could see, you know, and the way the trailer was cut, it made it feel like, okay, she's got this crazy family, and then she's going to leave. And, you know, if she leaves the family... Then basically they were holding her down, and you can kind of see that in a lot of different movies. But just almost similar to Fighter, another David O. Russell movie, the family had to really come together in order to succeed. And so the fact that she wasn't the one to just say, "Hey, I'm out of here. I don't need you guys. You guys are holding me down." She needed them all along. She just needed, and yes. At times they kept her down and they were poisonous, but despite that she overcame it and she found a way to utilize pretty much everyone in her life with the exception of the stepsister.
Yeah, well, I never came to end up adoring Robert De Niro's character. That was her father in the movie.
But what about that moment when he, you know, this is my fault. I filled your head thinking that you could be
that
more.
That was the worst thing that anybody could ever say to somebody. I am
but it's
so
true.
Sorry you failed. It's because I gave you the confidence to believe that you could follow your dreams. That is the worst line. That is so unendearing.
Yeah, but you could. That's
not a nice.
I'm not saying it's a nice thing, but I'm saying it's a very truthful.
No, it's not.
Oh, I know so many parents that would say that, man, you know, mom or dad.
They would say, I am sorry that you failed. It's because I gave you the wrong idea about your capacity to succeed. That, I'm no parent or parenting expert, but I'm pretty much sure that's on the top 10 things not to tell your children, I'm sorry you failed. It's my fault. I told you you could succeed.
So, I'm not saying that's good parenting. I'm saying there are so many parents out there like that. Well, they don't necessarily say it because they're not in a situation where their kid has the ability to perhaps do this, and that's part of the problem. But
so I don't see that she succeeded because of the family. I think she succeeded in spite of the family.
She found a way to utilize the family, though.
The only thing I think that she got out of it was that she, you know, her dad is some really weird. I can't imagine if this was like now the online dating thing, how he would have done it. But how he found the girlfriend, Trudy, and then how she capitalized on Trudy's good fortune was perhaps the only asset that I could see that relates back to her family. But besides that,
she continued to take care of the father. She used the auto body workshop as a facility.
Okay.
But the husband was there, you know, the best friend was being utilized. Like there's,
yes,
they all remained in her life, whereas you could so see it. Any other story would have cut them out and been like, okay, you know what? You guys are keeping me down. I have to distance. That's it. I'm disowning you guys.
Yeah, I like that approach. But I guess this is a great inspiration for people who want to take their family to the top, even though their family will be kicking and screaming, pulling them back down.
It's different. It's very much different.
Yeah. But I was hoping at some point I would come to love Robert De Niro's character. I never did. I just hated him more and more.
I felt bad. That moment that you speak of, that's where I felt bad for him. That's like, I'm like,
you felt bad for him?
Because he is a failed father.
Yeah, just say, I was a shitty father. I'm sorry. And end there. Not, I gave you the idea you could succeed and it was wrong.
He honestly felt that way, though.
Sometimes it's better to honestly shut up. Especially in that moment was like the lows of the lows of the lows. That was like the worst moment. That was like everything seemed like it could have come together and she was going to succeed. And then, boom, the rug was pulled out from underneath her. That was like the moment of the most epic failure. She was like on the verge. And had she not...
But they all were. Trudy was about to file for bankruptcy too. But for her own... I mean, she wasn't really bankrupt. She had her... people do this.
Right. So this was Joy's lowest moment. And the father, I feel like, just kicked her.
But that's what I'm saying. In his own demented way, he that was a pick-me-upper.
Oh, that's really lovely. He's got some work to do on himself. But
I'm gonna show you what real parenting in America is like. Because you are naive, huh?
Maybe. Perhaps. All right, let's not talk about my naivete. Let's go on to, I don't know what...
Well, let's talk about the sister, right? So
Oh, God, another one.
Okay, obviously you have a friend, and she was in many ways, kind of the only real villain in all of this.
Yeah, especially when she goes, the father sends her as a representative of the company, and then she makes all these decisions that were obviously bad for the company. That was another thing. I can't believe the dad did that. I sent your stepsister to be your representative. Are you freaking...
He was trying to, he was trying to be a good parent to both. And he saw that, like, okay, he was not, like, this was perhaps a good idea. He didn't really understand whether or not it was. As much as he says he has, like, a business acumen, obviously not that great. No. The auto body shop is not doing fantastic.
No.
And here's his daughter, who's his other daughter, who, you know...
He wants to inject her into this so that she can have some level of credit when really she's going to bring the whole thing down.
Or is it because, again, you're supposed to love your children equally. And so in this regard, it's like, how much money have you given to this daughter? And here's a girl that, you know, has worked in the workshop for you,
but doesn't know anything about anything and hates her sister and is going to go be the representative. I just can't see how this makes any kind of sense at all. And this was one of those a little like over the top ridiculous.
That you don't understand family. No, here's the thing, because we had a discussion about this during the holiday. It was a bunch of us. We're friends, we're not family. And everyone kind of talked about how, yes, like when you look at it from the outside, you think crazy and this and that, but how, when you, upon close examination, all of our families are in many ways this way. Your family's different, fine. But
it's got its dysfunction too. Perhaps I have a different approach. I don't do the Joy, you know, bring them along for the ride. I'm like, thanks, folks.
And that's what I'm saying. That would have been the difference. Joy could have very much done that. But in terms of the steps, you could understand that the father, he wanted to be equal. That's why when he was confronted with both of them in that one room, right? That was probably one of the first times that like they've ever had a discussion like that. Again, what's the old saying? Like a liar never wants to be confronted with everyone in the same room because then all the lies have to come out. And he's like, He stuttered the entire time. He didn't know what to say to one. He was just tippy-toeing around the subject.
Yeah, well, I guess I need to hang around your friends to understand family different, and I guess maybe thank my lucky stars that mine was not like that. What was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene? I really, like, in terms of the frustration that you felt,
Did you feel it too?
I felt it too, but I thought, you know, I thought obviously that's what worked towards the film, because there were so many moments where you thought we would get to the next phase, that things would be a lot better, and no, and no, and no, and you're like, ah.
That was your favorite part?
I think it was part of the technique. I mean, obviously, for me, the best part was when she finally comes into her own and has that meeting in Dallas. And the way she fully dictates it of, like, you leave that door open. And, you know, he's trying to...
So somebody who defrauded her, basically, she finds out and confronts the person.
Yeah.
And... yeah, she was a total boss in that scene. She owned it for sure.
Even though he was, I mean, you could tell the way he was being intimidating by walking across the room, not saying anything, having the shoes to make the click-click sound.
My favorite part of that scene is the power of her silence. And I see a lot of women, and I think I've been guilty of this too, that in order to be really effective, we try and use our words and be very powerful with our words and sound smart and say the right thing. And there was a part when the guy knew that he had been caught. And he's like, okay, I'll do this and then I'll give you this. And then she was just silent, didn't say anything.
And she looked at the window.
And then he goes, okay, fine, I'll give you this and this and this. And she still just wasn't fazed by it. Didn't have to say anything until he was, like, tripping over himself to be like, okay, fine, I'll give you this, and this. And then it was like, great.
And that was it.
So it was an incredibly powerful negotiation through the power of silence, which I think was so great because it's probably a lesson that I need to learn.
Well, especially in that moment when she knows she's right and, you know, a liar like that or whatever, you know, they're going to dig themselves in the hole. So if you keep quiet, you're good.
Yeah, but he had not only admitted that he was, like, caught, but he was, like, willing to, like, give more and more because he knew that if he didn't, she was going to destroy him. But she didn't have to say it. She just quietly let himself come to that realization and dig himself out.
Yeah. Well, she did. I mean, her story, right? She said exactly, you know, I spoke with a man named Charles. Lovely fellow, by the way. And here's what he said. And then, you know, she recounts that, and then boom, end of story.
Yeah, she wasn't like a confronting bitch from the get-go. She was very, almost nonchalant, matter-of-fact, telling a story, and then before he knew it, he was screwed. Mm-hmm. It was an awesome scene. For me, the best scene was the one where she gets to pass it forward, pay it forward. Mm-hmm. When she's like, you know, all done up to the nines in her new office, and the young mother comes in with her, you know, husband and baby to show Jennifer Lawrence, Joy, you know, an invention that she made, and Joy gets to, you know, validate. Oh yeah, this is great. Okay, you know, let's help make this dream come true for you. And not only that, but, like, you know, what hotel are you staying at? Let me get you, you know, the nicer place so that it's more comfortable for you. So that she was not only paying it forward to other people, and she, you know, cleared the path for other women to follow, and then wasn't trying to, like, shut the door behind her. She was trying to make it as easy for other women to follow her. Because I think some women are like, well, I had to struggle to make it. I want everybody else to go through all the shitty things that I had to go through and place obstacles in front of everybody so that, you know, they don't make it unless they've been through what I went through. But she wasn't like that at all. She wanted to make it as easy and pleasant of an experience for the people, the women that came after her. And I thought that was incredibly cool. I hope that was real.
Again, if I can't say that is real in terms of Joy, but knowing Jackie and how she's turned out, that's what I loved about, like, the QVC scene to me was fantastic. Not with Todd. He was horrendous. But when she kind of gets on stage, it's, I mean, you got to think, this is a time that, even just like in the news, everything, there was a whole different time. Now everything's much more conversational. I mean, for Christ's sake, you have people like us on YouTube just talking about movies.
But the thing that really worked is that we learned that authenticity sells. And that was another great, when Todd, the moron who couldn't work the mop the first time, ruined it. And then she went on really, like, as herself.
Yeah.
And that still holds true for us today, right? No matter how different sales look. I mean, I guess people still do QVC, but, you know, sales will look authentic.
So, but not even that. Like, but the fact of, you know, she's maintained that authenticity that, you know, she's always said, like, I'm not a business person. I'm a, you know, I clean the house 800 times a day, and if this is what I know. So you're 100% right. But even in the YouTube reviewer days, like, it's interesting, like, whether you're reviewing a computer, this and that, like, people, the most followed people are the most genuine people, and they'll have honesty, like, oh, I don't like this phone. I don't like that phone. You know what? This phone's great.
Yeah.
You gotta have that, otherwise, you're just a liar.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. So that was probably my third favorite scene, was the one where she starts with the stage fright. Oh, dear God. I was like, you got to be freaking kidding me.
But she was so endearing.
And then I love that it's a real thing that her best friend called in, and that's what shook her out of the freeze that she was in. And then through the questions that her best friend was asking, you know, pretending to be an interested customer, she told the whole story. She picked it up, and that was awesome. I mean, that's...
Because it was so much like that, the Kmart scene, right? In the parking lot, right? When they reversed the roles again this time, but they're just most natural when they're talking about what it is and talking about it with people that actually need and use the product.
Right. And then in that scene, it was so, a couple of times in the movie, law enforcement is the bad guy. I've been noticing this more and more in the Kmart scene. And then when she goes and finds out that that place is stealing her patent, and then police arrest her. So I don't know what this means at all about anything, but I just have noticed that that is becoming more and more of a theme. I don't know, maybe because it's people's real experience, but the lawyer in me sees, you know, all that part.
Well, because, as it turned out in the movie, according to the paperwork, the patent was under the umbrella of
those other people.
Yes.
But then it turns out not so much. The patent was for a completely different thing. Which I hope, did that make sense to you as a non-lawyer, how she figured out that she was paying this guy money that she really didn't owe?
I knew there's royalties involved. I get it.
You did.
I got enough to get that, okay, it was wrong.
Okay.
Like I said, I've seen Shark Tank.
Oh, yes. So Shark Tank is where you learn everything.
Here's the thing. You know what? The fact that in America, it's a real phrase of, if I didn't learn it on Shark Tank, I don't know it. That's legitimate. You know? And so if I didn't learn it, and I can honestly say most of the business I do, thank God for Shark Tank.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've watched it plenty of times, and I think it's got great stuff in there, but... Huh.
Like, for example...
You attend, like, Shark Tank University.
Yeah. Like, for example, in many ways, right, you could say the initial QVC deal was a consignment deal. Yeah? It is.
Oh, I don't know about that. Okay.
Well, right. Okay. How would you define a consignment deal?
Really? I don't even know how is... I don't even see. She creates something. This is going to go down a whole long rabbit hole. I don't even think that we should go down this one. Let's talk about fact or fiction, shall we?
Sure.
Okay.
Which fact would you like to start with first?
Well, let's talk about the things that were not true and thankfully not true.
Okay. Obviously the sister.
A random part that was not true was that her husband or ex-husband was not this, like, Venezuelan singer or something, which was a random detail to add to the movie that is not true.
Yeah, but you know what? It's...
I mean, it worked.
It worked in this way, right? So so the real husband is Anthony Moran, right? So hence Jackie Moran's name, my friend. And... You know, they met at Pace University, so she did attend college.
Which the movie does not show, and actually says she didn't do.
Because of the father and the divorce. So just kind of gave it an obstacle. But I think story-wise, the real reason that was in the way that it was it's better to have – like because when everyone gets in your business about don't do this, don't do that, and he's the one saying to Trudy and Rudy that, hey, but he's not a patent lawyer – you can easily dismiss him because you're just a musician. Who the hell are you? Whereas you have someone from Pace University who had field of study was business.
Yeah, you know.
Then it's a little different. Then it's like, okay, you kind of know what the hell you're talking about.
Part of me wishes that they would have included that she had a college education. Otherwise, you can see this movie and accurately. It shows that, you know, anybody, no matter who you are, or what your background is, what kind of education you have, you can make it in America. Yes, that is true. But the fact that she did have a college education, she was actually a degree in business administration. That's actually a huge tool. It's a huge accomplishment. And I think that people are better served to know that an education is a valuable tool. I think that you can watch this movie and be like, I don't need to go to college. I can
but here's
a millionaire without it. But
here's what I will say about that. I think and people think, oh, I don't need to go to college and I'll be just fine. No. Just because you don't go to college doesn't mean you shouldn't have an education. There are other ways to get an education besides just college, but it is up to you, therefore, totally to go out and get that education now because you're not going to college.
But I do think for sure that with all the obstacles she had to overcome, without in real life having the business degree, I don't know if she would have been able to make it in real life. I think that there's part of the skills and tools that you develop in getting your degree, and I'm sure what she learned from a business administration degree helped her get to the place that she did.
I'm sure. Well, it'd be like if she had a whole toolkit and she didn't use it. And now, that doesn't mean that she couldn't get different tools, though.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that this was really helpful. And you're totally right. Then the idea of the husband in the movie is that he's kind of this guy who doesn't know anything from anything, but in real life, he too was educated and therefore had some credibility to offer up an informed opinion, right? So it did color the characters in a way that I wish they would have included the part that she was college educated. I think that college education deserves its glory just bit. Although I do agree with your, you know, Shark Tank hero. Well, I don't know. Is he your Shark Tank hero?
Mark Cuban. I mean, he's not my... Yeah, Robert Hershevek is more who I relate to, but Mark is more kind of adamant about the American dream is alive and well.
Yeah, but Mark has become a huge... I don't know what to call it. An advocate of not going into massive debt for college. He thinks that the next... economic collapse will be due to
Loans. Some kids that like they you know, it's like if you're just ultimately gonna, I don't know, work a $50,000 a year job, which is quite high actually.
Let's say the average in America is $52,000, the median income.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, if you have to go into $200,000 of debt to get a $50,000 a year degree, it doesn't make sense to me.
Doesn't add up.
Yeah. So I know college is not the answer solution for everybody, and even me, somebody who was totally raised on the idea that your education is non-negotiable, and I did it for, you know, how old I was, 25 by the time I finished law school.
Well, you're a lawyer.
Yeah, so I you would think I'm like, you know, gung-ho about college. I don't think everybody needs it, and I don't, this ridiculous amount of money that it costs to complete your college education is not necessary for everybody. But it's helpful if you can not go into debt for it. And I think it was a valuable tool for her.
But I go back to, you have to see opportunity for what it is when it is. And so I know plenty of kids that go to college and like, yeah, I didn't learn anything.
Yeah. Well, but there are a lot of things in classes that I don't remember, but there's a way of thinking and a way of discipline, organizing yourself, being on top. There's life skills that you get attending all these classes that you
don't
remember.
Listen to David Foster Wallace's commencement speech, and that's a great speech.
Oh, man, if we could do a show on the anatomy of a commencement speech, I could be here for days. There's some really good ones out there. But we will. I digress a little too much. Okay.
So speaking of, we've talked about a lot of the kids. Now in the movie, they've condensed it to just be the two kids.
There were
a daughter.
Actually three. Oh my gosh. Yes. I cannot.
They
imagine.
Cut out Jackie, which is why they renamed the best friend to be Jackie instead of Ronnie, which was her actual name.
Oh, so is it? So there, she does have a brother and she has a sister.
Jackie, yes. I think Jackie's the youngest.
Oh, gotcha.
There's
okay.
Three of them.
Gotcha. The little girl in the movie.
That was Christy.
Adorable. Well played by that actress. And I'm sorry, I cannot remember her name, but she was adorable. She was the light of the movie. And all of this frustration.
You know, I felt her and Jennifer had a great kind of connection because you could see, like, I mean, you know, and that's the other thing. People say, like, that it's, you know, yeah, well, I have kids, so therefore I can't accomplish my dreams and so on and so forth.
Sure. I hear this all the time that people say, well, I have kids, you don't. That's why you get to... Well, there's plenty of stories. If you need one story to show that you can make it even when you have kids, here's one for you.
Yeah. So, and again, in real life, she didn't have just two. She had three.
Why? I wonder why they cut that out.
Here's the thing. Screen-wise, it's two. You want to establish... like, the connection that Christy and Joy had in the movie was so pure.
Yeah.
And every time Joy looked at her in terms of failure, she just looked at her daughter like... Because it didn't matter about the others, right? Yes, she was in debt. Yes, they were like, ah, Joy, what the hell's wrong with you? You're stupid, blah, blah. But it was about the daughter. And, you know, you can't to add just a third in, yes, even though it's factual, it just kind of dilutes it.
Yeah, it could have, but it, ugh, yeah. But I think it makes the story more remarkable to know that she had three kids.
It is, but again, you have to. There's some things I'm telling you. There's some things that work for screen, some things that don't. And
I'll take your word for it.
You know, sometimes when you have someone like David Orwell, you got to just trust the story element of it.
What is very cool is that in real life, even though her and her husband divorced, they stayed close. I wonder, did he live in her basement in real life, or did
that
they actually
I'm not sure.
just stay close? So that was cool.
I mean, he's the executive vice president of sales.
A lesson in co-parenting after divorce, you know, well done. That part was cool.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I think it's just great. Anytime you have people that can split but remain friendly, I think is a huge testament to who the people really are.
Yeah, I liked it. Let's see, what else? I guess that's it for the fictions that stood out to me. The soap opera Addicted Mother. Oh, my God. The mother was obnoxious, too. Oh, my God. This movie made me so grateful for my mom.
There you go. That's the joy that came out of it.
Yeah.
But there are so many women that just live in the soap opera world. Yes, it's a little stereotypical, but stereotypes also come from...
This whole thing about, like, how is it... Does one really smart person emerge from a whole basket of nuttiness? I mean,
they can. Yes,
I guess so. I guess so.
And that's again, that's the uplifting part, is that despite all this, someone can come out of it and do amazing things.
Yeah. All right. So I did like how in the movie they alluded to the fact that her first invention was actually this
collar. A fluorescent pet collar.
Yeah. It seemed like a trivial little detail, but then when I saw that it was actually real, I was like, oh, that's cool. So I'm glad that they put that in there. So it's not like the very first time she tried this, she was an overnight success. Well, she was never an overnight success, but she, you know, hit it big. And that it helped me keep faith because there's lots of ideas that I've had and I've begun to execute them and they have not gone well. But other things that I'm doing are going much better. So I think it's a real life thing where the first thing that you come up with doesn't work. Or in her case, she just never pursued it. Somebody else did and they made big bucks off of it, which is very much the way that it really goes in this world. So I like that bit of truth that they included.
I mean, here's, you know, I think it all comes down to one of the lessons is that if you're ever going to be considered, or, you know, by even your own standards, let alone anybody else's, a success, you're going to fail thousands of more times than you will succeed. And if you can accept that, then you can be a success.
Oh my gosh. Speaking of commencement speeches and failures, have you seen J.K. Rowling's commencement speech?
Be like Harry Potter.
No.
Wish magic upon the world. Is that what it, no?
No, it was nothing like that, but it was amazing. But it's called The Fringe Benefits of Failure and the Power of Imagination. And it came out in 2008, and every day that I studied for the bar, I was watching that that commencement speech, because it made me actually okay with the idea of failure. Anyways, that's such a good one. You've got to see that one. All right.
Fair How enough. About, I do want to talk about the mother a little bit more, because we kind of overpassed it. And because there's that filmic technique to it where, you know, yes, she's just watching soaps and it's part of her character, but the soap then becomes part of the movie in the sense that it sort of foreshadows or plays into, interprets and metaphors the thing that we're seeing.
That went over my head. I didn't get it.
Why?
I don't know. My eyes and ears Why? Had difficulty when, comprehending
when,
what was going on.
When the dad came back, right? That was foreshadowed of like, watch this, Joy. Look who comes back. Look who comes back. And then you get the guy in the soap opera, but then you get the father coming back. Like, it was all part. Like, it was just interesting.
It's a lot of work on my brain. It didn't jump out at me.
But it was the mother denying reality. Like, all the things that she loved in the soap opera were happening all around her, but she just didn't care for it. And then when she meets,
Phil, this is pretty deep. It didn't occur to me that way.
What was his name? Plumber. Yeah, I don't want to butcher his name.
I don't either.
Tucson,
something of that. It wasn't that, but something similar to it. That was kind of funny. I mean, really, I wonder if that was really true.
No, come on.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure it wasn't. But
it was just great. Hilarious. Again, because now she's ready to go back into reality, and then like, we got to find him more work. We don't have money.
Yeah, that was great. I like that part. But the mother, you know, does disaster.
She was. I wish in many ways, like, I would have preferred that to be the full technique throughout rather than the grandmother's voiceover, personally.
Yeah. That could have worked for me.
So, but do you know what that soap opera was, by the way?
No, not at all.
Fair enough. I'm not quite sure either. I never really got into soap operas. At AfterBuzz TV, we have a whole soap opera kind of genre of people, and I want to ask them if they would know. But yeah, I mean, and then there was that whole crossover when, you know, Joy's character ended up in the soap opera. Bros itself of like kind of the whodunit murder mystery type thing.
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
Why? It's film technique. It's, you know?
For some reason it didn't gel together. It didn't.
Okay.
But perhaps I was just too annoyed, just too busy being frustrated and wanted to be unfrustrated.
And they were helping you. It was the metaphor for what was happening.
Anyway. Yeah.
Fair enough.
It wasn't really effective for me.
Okay.
The other thing that I was waiting, because I was waiting for something about the soap opera to like come back at the end and sort of close that circle, right?
BM.
And then the same thing for me when there was an intense scene between Trudy, who is Joy's dad's girlfriend, I guess.
You could call her stepmother in some ways.
All right. And Trudy is the one with the money who initially backs Joy's invention. Mm-hmm. So in the scene when they're figuring out whether they're going to do business together, there's this question that Trudy asks, like, would you grab the gun?
That was question number four.
Right. And okay, and she, of course, says, I would grab the... So I was waiting for... Because it was so intense. It seemed to be, like, such a pivotal... Wow, I'm inventing words. Pivotal moment. Like, something really about that I was waiting for that to come back around at the end. Like, I thought maybe in the scene with the guy from Texas that there was going to be a gun and she was going to have to grab the gun and that was going to...
That would have been too violent, though.
I was just waiting for it to, like, come back around.
Well, I get what you're saying, because especially in the trailer, they kind of pit they take that point and then butt it up against the scene where she takes the shotgun from the guy next door, you know, and she cocks the shotgun and is ready to fire it. So I 100% agree, but I think it should have happened. I think that is a missing element. But let me ask you this: I think, what is that as a metaphor to you? Because perhaps it, as a metaphor, did happen in the movie, and we just missed it because we were looking for something more literal, much like the soap operas.
Well, I kept looking for it. I was waiting for either the literal or metaphorical.
But what is the metaphor that you took out of it? Just start that. Just answer that.
I didn't understand really what Trudy meant by that.
I took it as you protect the money at all cost. Because the question was, if you're in a room with a guy and he wants them, do you take the gun? And it's like, yeah, because I need to kill that guy because he's about to take the money.
Okay.
So protect the money at all cost.
Okay, that's reasonable interpretation. I can see
and
that.
And what did she do? In the end, she protected the money at all cost. They were about to go bankrupt. And, you know, in terms of Trudy, she would have to go bankrupt too. But she protected the money at all cost. She went down to the plant. And when that didn't work, she went down to Texas. She protected the money at all cost.
Okay.
You know, that's why the sister was the biggest, like, you know, villain of them all. Because, as we mentioned, yes, she goes down and negotiates. But she gives away money that they, number one, don't have. Number one, now they've agreed to raise the prices without Joy's consent and all these things. So she's not protecting the money. Whereas Joy, she was all about protecting the money of like, that's not how I do business. Remember early on, she called the plant of like, hey, I'm not being charged for your mistakes.
Yes.
Well, the money.
I see where you're going with this. And yet it didn't scream out to me that was the point of that. I was waiting to learn what did she really mean by that?
Well, I never found out. I mean, David O. Russell movies in many, like, they lend themselves towards anatomy movie because they're meant to be discussed. You know, they're not like the Peanuts movie.
Otherwise, I would have not had no idea what the soap opera part was about. And now that you say it, I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense.
Indeed.
But I missed it.
Oh, and by the way, so one of the things that is a fact, but they kind of skipped over it, was that she did sell Ingenious Designs to Home Shopping Network.
But we don't get to know for how much, which is interesting.
Well, it's unspecified.
Yeah.
It's unspecified. And then the Real Joy has over 100 patents, including HSN's best-selling product of all time, the Huggable Hanger.
For a minute when I saw that, I was like, wait, is this the story of, what's her name, the Shark Tank?
You're talking about Lori Grenier.
Yes. I almost thought, like, is that her story? That, for a minute, that
what it could have. Yeah, I would love to talk to Lori. I haven't really researched Lori's, but, you know, Lori obviously is the queen of QVC.
And she also, in the intro to Shark Tank,
she has over 100 patents.
Right. So that's why.
She sold millions yeah, worldwide, blah, blah.
Right, right.
So you do watch Shark Tank?
Yes, I said I do.
Oh. Okay. It sounds like you hid the fact for a very long time.
No. I don't watch soap operas, but I do watch Shark Tank.
I do not watch soap operas either. Before we get into the Forbes article, a couple things of note. In terms of the production, they mainly filmed in Boston, which, you know, David O. Russell likes to film there a lot. More specifically, like North Reading, Wilmington, but yeah, in the Boston area, in pretty much February of this year, they kind of ended up on April, I believe. So they shot from February, March, April, which is a quick enough time.
Feels very fast.
I mean, the interesting part is how fast these movies get shot and then how fast they get to be released. Like, this movie, if you think about it, okay, beginning of April and then it's coming out now. It's not that, I mean, it seems like a long time.
But it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, things go by quick.
I'm a little, I don't know if I'm surprised, but I'm a little, I think, disappointed by, I know this movie barely came out, but by the box office and by the reviews of it. I think they've been pretty, kind of harsh, although maybe I have been harsh in saying how much of this movie I've spent annoyed and frustrated and just waiting for it to come to resolution.
I mean, part of it is you get to a point in, if someone like that, we just did Hateful Eight earlier, so feel free to check that out. But you start to get compared as a filmmaker to yourself. And so is it the best David O. Russell movie in recent history? Probably not. Does that make it a bad movie? No. So you got to just, rather than compare it to another David O. Russell movie, just compare it as a movie to itself. And I think that's part of the problem. But, right now, $20 million worldwide against the budget of $60 million. Yeah, I think it should be doing a lot better.
I mean, we are living in the land of Star Wars, and so anything else is going to get crushed.
Yeah. But I think the nice part is that it'll pick up. Jennifer Lawrence is obviously nominated for a lot. I think a couple of things, David O. Russell in the movie. So you'll see that kind of ramp up because people's curiosity will peak.
Okay. I hope so. I really do hope a lot of people see this. It is definitely worth watching.
So now, in terms of what was the other thing that I wanted, let's talk about the Forbes article, shall we?
We shall.
And let me know if you disagree or agree with this. Lessons to learn from this movie, according to Forbes.com. Number one, people don't want you to succeed.
I have seen that this is relatively true. People are very comfortable where they are, even though they say they want better. And they say they want better for you, but they feel that they'll get left behind. And so many times people would rather keep you down so that they can feel comfortable about where they are. I would
stamp
reluctantly, but wholeheartedly say true.
Fair enough.
So on the road to success, I'm sure you're experiencing this. You're going to have to leave a lot of people behind. I think it's just, I don't know if it's a sad reality. I think it's a reality, but people that you leave behind, you'll look back and say that was, for the best. And you'll find better people to be around who actually do support you. Because that's the corollary to that, is most people don't want you to succeed, but the ones who do will
be your best friends.
Yeah, and will be really amazing and will be the best part of the journey to success.
There you go. That's a nice way to put it. The movie's best lesson is get ready to go to war every day, rain or shine, if you want to build a big company.
I hate this go to war reference. But,
okay, you're going to have to work hard every day. There's no like, oh, we joked about it. Oh, it's Christmas. It's like, no, just because it's Christmas, that doesn't mean.
Did you work Christmas? I worked Christmas. Did you work Christmas?
I worked a little bit on Christmas.
Same here.
So, you know what I mean? Like, and by the way, no one's telling me I have to work on Christmas, but that's just the mentality you adapt to. And it's not even adapt. Like, that's just, you realize if I want to accomplish certain things, this is what I have to do.
Yeah. I mean, I understand and appreciate the spirit of what this is trying to say, this lesson, and I can agree with it. But the war reference, I don't like that. It's like it's either you kill or be killed, which is what I think of when I think of war.
Well, that's what Joy did. She was able to, despite all that, just like...
But she didn't have to kill anybody to get there.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So she was able to do it in her own terms.
Yeah.
So interestingly enough, Joan Rivers was in the movie and
people... Well, she wasn't actually in the movie.
Like... person of Joan right. Rivers.
But I thought it was great that her
daughter
played her. Yes. Yeah, that was cool.
But even like her story is much in the same way. Kind of, she found success but was able to do it on her own terms without having to make any sort of compromises. I think I miscopied number three. So I don't have that because number three on mine is the same as number two. If you want to hit – so number four, if you want to hit a home run and create a new market as Joy did, gather feedback, ask for advice, and then do what you think is right, not what you were told by experts, employees, or friends.
So much good stuff in this one. Yeah. Experts. We give the title expert to a lot of people. A lot of people assign it to themselves. And
I'm an expert.
Exhibit A. So I totally agree with that. And employees, you know, they friends can sometimes be the worst, because we go back to lesson number one. They don't always want you to succeed. So I would definitely agree with that. But what this whole thing means by gathering feedback and asking for advice, this is looking to see, does it resonate? Does it connect with an audience or a market? And that's basically what it's asking you to do. Is like, you, it's one thing to have a great idea. It's another thing to know that people in this world are going to use that idea, or they also think it's not just a good idea, but it's also well executed. So that's the gathering feedback, ask for advice. I totally subscribe to that. And then do what you think is right. Yes, so much of this is success from your gut. It's like what your intuition, gut, whatever you call it, that you rely on as your internal GPS is right. And so I definitely agree that I think that's what this is trying to say, is that you got to
follow what you believe. Yeah. I have since found number three. So, as Forbes writes it, joy reveals great attribute about entrepreneurs that, the founder of ThinkFin mentioned to me just last week. The lesson is entrepreneurs need body charisma, and neither joy nor, the founder of ThinkFin, we're talking about muscles or figures, but more about the vibes of your nonverbal communication. For example, in the movie, Cooper's character told Joy to pitch products on TV. It is all about the hands and what you do with them when the camera is rolling. So I think you obviously also highlighted that just in terms of the Dallas Man scene.
Yes. I thought that part was interesting, the whole hands part. But I thought what was more effective was about how they had tried to dress her up as something that she wasn't, but that was already working. And she like took off the costume and was like,
"Let me make one change."
Yeah. And so I thought that was great. It is totally true. You have to present it in a way that other people can hear what you're trying to teach them.
Yeah.
And it's not about looking good, but it is sort of not acting the part, but it is being the,
you have to be authentic, as we said.
Yeah. I think that's probably what it comes down to.
And by the way, going back to number, the last one we talked about, you know, not listening to other people, the Bradley Cooper's character as the QVC guy, he kind of exemplified that too, because, you know, he kept going against his natural instinct and everyone else's instinct about her, of what would work. And because in many ways, Todd was supposed to be the expert. He's the number one sales guy.
Yeah, but when he had his whole little freak out moment, then like, oh, so much pressure. That was for me a sign that he was not going to do well. I knew it. Or else, why would they include that detail?
Well, I think, you know, you could look at it as like, that's an eccentric thing. You know, I mean, actors kind of get that way all the time of nervous and or other performers. But then when they get on stage, like, that's what they do. They perform really well.
Well, apparently not, because he couldn't even figure out how to use a mop.
But again, does that guy look like he ever mopped in his life?
Probably not. No.
Fair enough. And the final lesson is that entrepreneurs can thrive in the chaos and dysfunction that creates the frenetic energy to build something great from scratch.
Yeah, I think that's probably what drives a lot of people, is that they're experiencing a lot of chaos and dysfunction and they want a way out. So, yes.
So there you go. Let's see. Some fun facts. Joy, the real Joy, developed the Miracle Mop in 1990, the same year Jennifer Lawrence was born.
Oh, isn't that adorable? That's Reed, you know, so jealous about how young. Or I don't know if I'd want to be that young, but it is 1990? Holy shnikes.
This movie, I couldn't believe it. And in some ways, I kind of maybe wanted it to be rated R, but it was only rated PG-13.
Where would it have been rated R?
I wanted it to be rated R. No, like, I'm not saying it deserves a rated R, but I think it could have pushed it a little bit more and perhaps... Because David O. Russell's...
I'm a little afraid to ask where it could have been pushed in that way.
No, David O. Russell's movies, for the most part, have been rated R. And look at the success of all the other ones, right? American Hustle, Silver Linings Playbook. So, and this one is getting less favorable reviews, less. So maybe there's that like little element missing to make it the critical darling that it needed to be. I don't know the footage. I can't exactly go and say like, hey, this scene needed a little bit more F words.
It needed the gun.
Maybe it did need the gun. You know, who knows?
I'm just kidding.
But yeah, this, you know, I don't know. To me, R just says gritty, and a movie like this should be gritty, and I think it was. And again, watching it, I didn't think it was PG-13, and now realizing that it is PG-13, maybe that's the problem.
Maybe.
Again, I can't pinpoint it, but it's just David O. Russell. He makes R-rated movies.
Oh. Maybe there could have been more colorful language. Oh, how about in the wedding scene? And the one of my favorite parts,
the wedding, yes.
It's in the, I don't know if it's the trailer or just the TV ads where he's like, I give this one a 50-50 chance. Mm-hmm. Like, that was so obnoxious and so sad and so hysterical, but that could have been pushed to our territory.
Perhaps. And whenever, I forget her name, the first girlfriend, Sheila Shelley, whatever, and she's there, and he's like, I toast to you. And interestingly enough, it is the second movie of 2015 to have a female protagonist named Joy. Pixar, Disney, Inside Out.
Oh, that was why I had that blank look on my face.
Anyway, what are your last thoughts? Anything that we might have missed about this movie?
I was almost gonna say like, oh, we didn't talk about that wedding scene, which I thought was really critical to the humor in this movie. It did have some humor to it. I don't know if that was actually there was humor injected into it, or it was just like so like, oh, come on, that it was almost funny.
I think, well, it's a staple of David O. Russell to have comedy within his movies.
Yes, and it got some LOLs from people that I was around. I was too annoyed to be LOLing, but it did from other people I was around.
You just root for strong women and you want to see them rise straight to the top. You got to know that the struggle is part of the whole thing.
Perhaps maybe because I'm in it in so many ways that it's that's frustrating. And that why I wanted to make sure that it turns out well. But I definitely think that this is a must-see. And I'm actually, for this reason, glad that it's PG-13. I would love young girls to see this movie, for sure.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can watch it multiple times, really drill it in their brains. But I think it's a really awesome story. I mean, it's so... It just
typifies
the American
dream. Who knew you could take a story about the Miracle Mob?
But that's what's so great. I think that is what...
I think that's, unfortunately, the biggest turnoff for people. They're like, wait, this is the story of the Miracle Mob?
Right. Well, but then, you know, the other movie that I did hear, The Big Short, wait, this is a movie about banks, you know? So there's a lot of movies this season where it seems to be about some boring thing that you're like, how are you going to make an entire movie about that entertaining and engaging? But it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, what I say to those haters or critics is that the Miracle Mob is just the MacGuffin.
What's the MacGuffin?
A MacGuffin. Okay, so the story goes, and for anybody who doesn't know this, it's an Alfred Hitchcock tale, right? The MacGuffin.
That would explain why I don't know it, because
two people are on a train. Here, let me look. But basically, the MacGuffin is, I'll tell it another time. The MacGuffin is something that the characters are after, but the audience doesn't care. The MacGuffin in like a heist movie is the money, this and that, and it's just something that they need.
Gotcha.
But nobody cares. It just sends them on the motion.
Thank you.
So the Miracle Mob is the MacGuffin.
I see.
Anyway.
I like it. It's cool. It's just very American. You take something, you make it better, and you patent it, and you sell a gajillion of them, and we live happily ever after.
Darn right.
Happily ever after, in her case, was passing it forward to everybody else and giving other people the chance. That's what I think the real success was, that she made it and then took other people up with her, which is exactly what I love about Maria Menounos, taking us up on the ride with her, clearing the path, and then making it easy for us to walk that path that she laid out. Thanks, Maria.
There you go. So thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back another time. We've got so many movies still coming up just in this calendar of 2015 year alone. We've got Revenant, Daddy's Home, Concussion, and I think that actually does wrap it up for 2015. But in this year alone, we've done Star Wars. We've done Big Short, as Chelsea mentioned. We've done Hateful Eight. So many darn movies. And by the way, yes, I'm sure there's many people out there that have seen Star Wars and like Star Wars. Catch us on Anatomy of a Movie. But also our engineer, Mark Donica, he's on a show on Popcorn Talk called Jedi Alliance, where you can get all the Jedi nerd stuff that you need about Star Wars.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So check them out too. And if you get bored, there's plenty of other shows to catch up on too.
You can find me over at Black Hollywood Live on Justice Is Served.
That's right. If you like legal stuff and business acumen type stuff, follow her. Chelsea Galicia.
Yep.
There you go.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Thank you guys for being with us, and comment below, let us know what you guys thought, and we're going to try to also do kind of maybe a standalone interview, whether with Joy, whether with Jackie, we'll find out to get you some more info, because I think there's a story there in as well. We'll talk to you later. Bye!
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.